Welcome to the True Data Ops Podcast. We'll get started in a few seconds to allow folks to get logged onto the live stream. Be back in a few. Okay, welcome to this episode and season three of our show, True Data Ops. I'm your host, Kent Graziano, the Data Warrior. In each episode, we want to bring you a podcast discussing the world of data ops and the people that are making data ops what it is today. Be sure to look up and subscribe to the dataops.live YouTube channel, because that's where you're going to find all the recordings from our past episodes. If you missed any of the prior episodes, now's a good chance to catch up. Better yet, you can go to truedataops.org and subscribe to the podcast. Then you'll get proactive notifications when we have new episodes. Now, my guest today is CEO and founder of Illumix.ai, Ina Tokarev-Sela. And I hope I pronounced that as close to correct as possible.
It's perfect, then. Thank you so much.
Yeah, she's a multi-patent holder and an expert in knowledge graphs, natural language, deep learning, data product monetization, Gen AI, very long list here, and then something that she calls generative semantic fabric, which I'm really fascinated to learn more about. So welcome to the show.
Happy to be here. Now the expectations are high.
Yeah, well, you know, anytime I get somebody on here who's got patents, I have to mention that, because it's, I think that's just an amazing thing to be, an accomplishment to be able to have invented something so new and different that you can get a patent on it. And that's what we need. That's what innovation is all about, and what we try to do in our industry.
Yeah, well, cheers to that.
So for folks who don't know about you, could you give us a little bit of your background in data architecture and AI and your career, and you know, a little bit about your founding of Illumix?
Yes, of course. I'm Ina Tokarev-Sela. I'm the founder of Illumix. And I would start, we're here in the data architecture context. So let's review my career in the lens of data architecture. So you might remember this program called MATLAB. So my data architecture journey started in programming graphs in MATLAB for something which we called multidimensional geometry. So it was during my academic studies, and we're working with Nestle, and we convinced Nestle that graphs is the best thing they can do for the analytics, and it worked. It was magical. I fall in love with graphs forever, and this is why I actually continue to be fascinated with graphs as a technology. This experience actually brought me to start my career at SAP. In SAP, I was lucky to be part of journey of SAP HANA Cloud Platform. So in-memory architecture and in-memory database, and Hadoop was already the same in the background. Our customers had both architectures in parallel, so it was a very interesting journey to see how the industry evolves. And here I would say the main focus was to really navigate enterprise customers between all of those architectures and make decisions for them sometimes to, you know, how to operate quicker, better, with higher ROI. And then I switched to Sisense's deep artificial intelligence. And finally, we started to do new gen knowledge graphs. So from Neo4j to Neptune, GraphDB, Arango, all those graphs, so we tested everyone, and we implemented architecture for Gen BI on graphs at Sisense. It was pretty cool. And then I started Illumix. So Illumix, as you rightfully mentioned, is based on data architecture that we patent, generative semantic fabric. It's a mouthful definition of a knowledge graph of semantic embeddings. So think about a vector database combined with knowledge graphs. And this basically encapsulates the context and reasoning behind your data.
Okay, wow. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit, because I do want to understand a little bit more on how that fits into the architecture really well. Now, this season on the show, we were trying to kind of take a little step back. Mm-hmm. This is the third season. And so we want to look at our world of true data ops and what's evolved and some of the things that we've all learned in the last couple of years. Now, you've been a leader in the field of machine learning and AI, and, you know, helping customers take advantage of their data to make real business decisions. So could you tell us a little bit about how you've seen the space evolve in the last couple of years and some of your focus now at Illumix?
Yeah, data ops is a discipline I was fascinating for a long, long time. And I must say, especially in enterprise, you do not really touch it in the way that you touch it in, you know, in modern data stack companies, right? So in enterprise, it's all about monoliths and how you're basically building workflows of CI/CD around monoliths. And I'm fascinated in how data ops has evolved, especially over the last 5 years, let's say. Starting from, you know, this orchestration of modern data stack, data flows experience to basically this generative AI frenzy in 2022-2023, where every data ops operation was challenged with generative AI use cases and implementations. And of course, lots of frustration because things did not scale as expected or as frictionless as expected. And this year, I think cost is being the major theme. So, mm-hmm. I would stress that the cost of running data ops actually lower than cost of not running data ops, but we can discuss it later in the pillars, mm-hmm. In the pillars context. What I see for 2025, Gartner already points 2025 as AI-ready data year, right? And it stresses back that data ops are instrumental to basically creating those data environments, those microservices for data, right? And having testing, monitoring around that, and then have collaboration environment for multiple multidisciplinary teams and so on and so forth. So I think importance of data ops in the year of AI data is actually emphasized.
Yeah. Like you said, too, I mean, I think we've got a combination of things from what I've seen is like, we've got the scale, right? Things have just... Mm-hmm. Continue to grow and grow and grow. And now we've thrown in really trying to use AI and Gen AI. And pretty much everybody agrees that if you don't have the data right, then the outcome from AI and Gen AI is not going to be very great. Yeah. So it's like trying to manage that. Like I think you're the first person that said the cost of doing data ops is less than the cost of not doing data ops. And that's an awesome perspective. I hadn't heard anybody actually put it that way before, but I definitely agree.
Yeah, and you know what we also say, it takes generative AI to get generative AI ready. And this is why, especially from day one in Illumix, so we started the company in 2021, we incorporated both graphs and semantic models as part of our architecture. And we combine our expertise in building ontologies for basically data reconciliation and data management and then self-service access to data analytics. But it's also very much dependent on the metadata customers have. So our ability to bring a customized experience to every landscape, if it's on-premise, on the cloud, the more like modern platforms like Snowflake, for example, or more traditional ones like on-premise Oracle installations and so on and so forth, is basically through metadata. So we're able to capture the nitty-gritty of activities in every enterprise by basically mimicking the metadata flows.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, you mentioned a couple of things there. You mentioned ontologies, which is something that I've been involved in for years, because from a business perspective, and I think this is where we get to, you know, we had conversations about the semantic web years ago, and just, you know, semantic layers in general, they have to be in business terms. If the business people were really going to take advantage of all this data that's all over the place, they have to have some way to understand it in terms that they understand that aren't technical like some of us tech geeks do. And at the same time, though, the metadata necessary to put all that together has become even more important, like you said, because of Gen AI, right? Is how is a machine going to understand it in terms that are useful for solving business problems, right?
Yeah. So it brings me, this might explain why we call this technology generative semantic fabric. generative, it's because we do use generative AI from day one. Semantic, it's because we're empathetic about business users who are actually human in the loop, right? So you can build whatever architecture you would like. To me, a current perspective of any new data project should encapsulate potential use of generative AI agents or analytics on top of it. So naturally, you want everything is being governed and certified. And I do not believe in governance, which does not include domain experts and more business-oriented users. So this is semantics. It's super important. We have to wrap up whatever functionality and context and reasoning we have in those systems in application workflows, which are which have semantic meaning, right? And business descriptions and all of that. And Fabric goes to... So I mentioned semantic layers. Semantic layers are usually encapsulated in one tool, either a warehouse, maybe some BI tool, and so on and so forth. So to me, business logic, it might be spread around the whole organization. It might also be different in different units, maybe by design, like different geographies might have different definitions. But anyways, if you only encapsulate your semantics in one tool, especially for big organizations, it's not viable. It's just because the data spreads throughout so many systems. And this is why I do believe that we do need to have this repository, this glue, which can connect to any interface in organization and keep the semantics aligned.
Yeah, and I'm with you 100% on that. That's like I told you before the show, this is a conversation that we had even when I worked at Snowflake, and I've had it continuing after Snowflake, is that that's one of the big challenges is I started off in data warehousing and BI where it's like, okay, we use business objects. So the semantic layer was inside of business objects. But if you wanted to then use Tableau, you had to build it all over again. And the odds are that it's the business logic's not necessarily going to come out the same between the two. And, you know, a lot of customers I worked with over the years, definitely that's like back 30 years ago, the dream was to have the single source of truth, the data warehouse, right? Now it's like, can we have one place where we can access the data in terms we understand, regardless of what tool we want to use to do our analytics or reporting? And then again, like I say, you throw the Gen AI stuff on top of it. We want to run AI off of the same thing that we're running our BI off of, right?
Yeah.
And having that one place, it makes a lot of sense to me from that perspective of trying to make the data useful to as many domains and audiences as possible.
Yeah, I think the biggest promise of generative AI in enterprise setting goes to intelligent decision making on scale. And of course, right now we have this closed gardens of application environment where you have to pre-model basically the data model, right? And the new generation of data modeling is context building. So more expensive people of new generations are semantic data scientists. They're building context and reasoning for organizations with assumption that they actually capture all the business logics in correct way and they match it to the right data. So we have the same assumption that we had for data modeling for BI right now with a more black boxy technology. So I think it's lots of risk management that we should take in this journey because it's to me at least, it's taking even bigger leap of faith that we did for BI.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And especially with, you know, of course, everybody knows about hallucinations and all that. So we never talked about, in BI, we talked about bad data, right? We had data quality issues, but we didn't have to worry about hallucinations and things that were like coming from nowhere. We didn't understand where did that even come from? And that is now probably one of the primary worries that people have is we want to make sure that whatever's coming out of the AI, you know, can we trust it, right? Is that, that's one of the pillars. And you mentioned governance, and that's definitely one of our seven pillars of True Data Ops is governance and security and managing all of that. How important, or maybe even more important, do you think that sort of thing is now today because of things like AI and Gen AI?
Totally, the importance is still there. I will stress that three major pillars out of the DataOps pillar that you mentioned are most important. So the first one, of course, is governance. You don't want people to access what they're not supposed to access, and it goes to derivative insights and so on and so forth. So governance should be not only part of data analytics behind generative AI, but also part of every generative AI interaction. Second, I would say this collaboration environment, right? So a single source of truth, a single source of truth definitions, or at least ability to document on scale with as much as the automation augmentation. In our case, we do believe in augmentation, actually bring people to, you know, to certify definitions which are automatically generated, right? So have combination of both words. And the third one, which we didn't discuss yet, is basically user experience, right? So user experience right now with generative AI and especially with semantics models is expectations from business users to use the same terminology that data is stored, data is labeled in the data sources, because semantic models is a work by proximity search. If you use different terminology, articulated equation in different manner that your database is labeled, here you got your hallucination. And this is where business users have hard time to actually trust the technology, you know, especially for structured data, it's black box. You usually do not know what sources are and how the question and answer was articulated and all of that. So basically trusting and using the answers for decision making is a big gap. So I would add user experience is as a big issue in specifically in generative AI context.
Yeah, and when you talk about labeling the data, what do you mean when you say that?
For structured data, think about databases, data lakes, warehouses. My, you know, favorite SAP example, and SAPs like to call the data models in absolutely non-semantic naming convention. You simply cannot put semantic model on that. So what I mean by that, for computer vision, you had to label pictures. It's a dog, it's an elephant, and so on and so forth. So now we need to give our tables, our columns, our transformations meaningful names. So when someone asks about the metric, which is defined as alias in your data pipeline, semantic model can refer to it in correct way. Right. So this is what I mean by labeling.
So to a certain, it's a, you know, applying the business terminology and the ontologies to the structures underneath, right?
Yeah. So we actually took approach which is a little bit different from derivative data approach. So I think the typical approach with RAG and other techniques of encapsulating data context is basically, okay, we handle data labeling, right? We named the tables a meaningful name, and then we have those examples chunked, right? And then we feed it in into the beast, and we expect it to work without really any guarantee. So we said, you know, especially for enterprises, especially in domains which are highly regulated, it's kind of, you know, too much of leap of faith, too much of a risk to take. So let's make it transparent, right? Let's build ontology or knowledge graph out of business terminology. Think about this ontology of definition, what is customer, where, what's the policy, and so on and so forth, what are the relationships, and let's incorporate it as vector embeddings. So it's automated context and reasoning underneath. On top, what you see is actually your business glossary, right? So metric store, business glossary, auto-generated. And then domain experts can actually certify all the definitions. And the best part that when you implement generative AI, agentic analytics, the chatbots are going to go through this business glossary, which is certified. So everything is deterministic. Why it's hallucination-free? Because actually every prompt is already matched to permutation of definition that you have. So it's kind of this managed environment that you cannot program your prompt. And you know, you have this full explanation about how logic has been calculated. I think it's more healthier approach because I do not believe, I think what was YDC? Someone else just published this marketing material which say, let's take human out of a generative AI implementation. I say, let's take human in generative AI implementation. But you know, in way it's scalable, it makes sense.
Right, and so I think the the certification process is probably one of the more critical pieces, and that really falls under, you know, it's a form of governance, right? Is to make sure that what we're calling an apple to, you know, trivialize it, but, you know, that so that the chatbots, when I ask a question, it doesn't misinterpret what I asked and is able to match it to, you know, the semantics of the business properly.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's empathetic thing to do is actually explain user how you understood the question and which data is mapped. And so this is, you know, basics. And majority of tools do not provide that, which is very pity. And I actually think governance is cool. Governance is on the rise. Governance is cool. And governance should not be this, you know, tedious job and going documenting stuff. Governance should be on conflict resolution, on collaboration with business owners and business members, and maybe just, you know, also collaborating with strategic planning departments to understand where business logic is going, what should be supported in the future, and so on and so forth. So actually, we're coming from this proverbial dashboards, which are static, which still will be kept for KPIs, right? You will always have those KPIs. You want to open your dashboard, you see, like as I do every morning, I look into the KPIs, you know, your pipeline, everything. It's fine. But for actually make your decisions based on data, I expect every employee who comes to me with initiative or budget request or anything else to have numbers. So now everyone should have numbers. There are no excuses anymore.
And like you said, it's transparent as to where those numbers came from, how they were calculated, what was the logic behind it, that it's not a black box. It's not just a Excel chart.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. One of the other things that occurred to me too is with all this, you know, the labeling and, you know, the human, keeping the human in it to say, yes, this is correct. Then on another part of the governance aspect, the classification of the data, such as, you know, PII, PHI data, any kind of sensitive data, we should then be able to automate tagging the data that way as well in order to avoid any, controversies or crossing the lines of things like the various regulatory agencies, right?
Absolutely. And back to data ops, lineage has this profound importance in this flow because you do need to understand the sources for PII, for example. PII might be 7 transformations down the road, but in pharma, you're interesting to know that, right? And second is monitoring. So being able through metadata, actually monitor what has changed and what's the impact and what is not reliable anymore, you know, both goes to both AI dashboards and generative AI, it's valid for all. So basically having this guide rails is super important.
Yeah, and that's one of the other pillars is automated regression testing and monitoring. We kind of combine those two together and, you know, being able, again, I think that's one of the benefits I see certainly with AI is being able to actually automate some of that more so than we did. Because in the data world, we were horrible at testing, at regression testing, especially our algorithms. And back in when we were just doing ETL, it's like there wasn't a lot of validation going on. The assumptions were the ETL was correct. And you never knew it wasn't until an end user ran a report and said, those numbers don't look right. Right? And then you start backtracing it. So I think having that in there and being able to automate that even more, but then, like you said, the monitoring, because even if you get your algorithms are correct at the time that you build them, and this could be your machine learning algorithm as well, right? If the nature of the data somehow changes in a way that was never anticipated, you might get some weird results, even though everything was tested along the way. And I think I see that's where the monitoring comes in, is right, is making sure that things are within some boundaries somewhere, some sort of parameters of reasonableness that, yeah, this is still right.
Yes, it works as expected or designed, for sure.
Yeah, because otherwise, again, we're back into, you know, where did that answer come from? How did we get there? So what you said, though, about transparency, I think that's even more important, along with lineage and all of these things, to say, to be able to very easily see how did that, where did that result come from, and to be able to trace it back and say, oh, you know, we were expecting that field was between 1 and 100, and now we're getting values in the thousands. And that wasn't something we expected. And that changes the way we need to think about doing this.
Yeah. Or even this query should have taken 2 minutes, but it actually ran for hours. So it's another, I would stress this cost is another parameter of governance. And this is something which we should be monitoring closely looking forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in the last couple of years, there's been a movement towards FinOps. Right, is making that more transparent, especially with so many people having moved to the clouds. And then if it's a subscription service or it's a pay-as-you-go service, at the end of the month, they get this massive bill and go, what happened? How did we manage to spend that much money? What did we actually do? But to have, again, back it up farther, that it doesn't get to the end of the month before you see that something went crazy. Like you said, should have run in 2 minutes and it's now been 60 minutes. We need to take a look and see, and have an alert, right? A proactive alert that says, hey, somebody needs to go take a look at this.
You might even want to limit some of the users asking those questions in the first place, right? So if you do have this estimation, this query is very heavy query, you might want to just allow that to specific users overall to manage that. So agent ops, it was called agent cost.
Agent ops. That's good too. Do you have any advice to companies? I mean, you're obviously run a software company, so I usually ask the question about buy versus build. So I'm sure you get into these conversations all the time about, you know, should we buy a tool that does what we're looking for versus, you know, all the smart people in our company, we can just build it ourselves. What do you end up telling people about that?
You know what? It's a very valid point. At the end of the month, I look in the burn rate, and you know what is the highest cost? People. It was the same in corporate. It was the same in growth startup environment. So our highest spend is people. So to me, it's always buy if you can. Right. Of course, you need to have the TCO. I would also stress, always start with the business case. What's your business case? If the business case right now is self-service access or customer segmentation or a call center automation, so start with the business case and then go back to what you need to build this business case. And it goes back to, you might need your AI-ready data solution or governance solution, or you can start with chatbots right away because, you know, everything is rosy. It really depends on the situation you're in. But I believe our people are going to be even more stressed in the future, just not with the tasks they perform today. There will be new generation of tasks for them. Never exchange labor for dollars, for CapEx dollars.
And the fear so many people have of, you know, AI is going to take my job. The way I say it, it's like, it's going to change your job, right?
Yeah.
Even my son, who's in university now, one of his professors said, for the paper, he said, I want you to actually use AI, so use ChatGPT, to produce the paper. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of people are telling him, no, that's cheating. You can't do that. And so he's now already learned how to, and he's a really good writer and he writes very quickly as it is. But we talked about this yesterday, the productivity gain, because instead of him spending a couple of hours writing this paper, it was like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And he got a perfect grade on it.
Yeah, but then you need to have new skill of this criticism, right? Checking the sources, maybe cross-validating, orchestrating, the new types of skills we should acquire to actually be able to be augmented by all those tools. And of course, sensitivity to privacy and you know, all of that is required right now in the workspace.
Yeah. And so like any new skill, there's a learning curve. And we've got to pay that upfront cost, which is, he talked about that, about how long it took him to learn how to do it over the last couple of weeks, because they gave him the assignment, you know, about a month ago. I said, yeah, but now you've learned how to do it. Now you have the productivity going forward, right? And so doing these sorts of things, working with these type of tools, with Gen AI, to make business decisions, we can spend more time I guess, even, you know, discussing, is this the right thing to do? But we can come up with a much, hopefully a better proposed solution faster. Yeah. And move on. And then there will be a lot of jobs, I think, that, you know, it would just be, it's just productivity enhancer for people. And then that means they're going to be able to do new and different things, but they got to pick up a couple of new skills along the way.
So here in Elimex, we believe in application-free future. And we believe that solutions like ours have, of course, major impact on that. And this application-free future makes you, of course, more efficient because you don't need to learn systems, how to operate your CRM system, how to operate your ERP system. You just, you know, have your task, make a decision, and maybe you edit your workflow, what have you. But for that, you have to demonetize. So it's a turning monolith into more microservices data layer, on the software layer, in the modeling layer, and semantics layer, and the agents. So we need to orchestrate all the parts. And this is where data ops, you know, in wider context of data ops becomes even more profound as underlying principle.
Right. Yeah. No, completely agree with you. It's a new world, and people are going to have to think a little different. But yeah, the application of data ops, like you said, is sort of expanded now, and it's even more important, right? If we're going to do these sorts of things. So we're pretty much out of time. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about, what's coming up next for your company, any events that you're going to be at, if people want to come out and meet you and hear you speak. For longer than what we were able to do here today.
It's going to be exciting 2025. And I see that Elimex is going to be focusing more and more, of course, on the use cases which we already cover, which is the ERP data and governance and agentic analytics deployment from the prism of self-service access. So please connect to me if you're interested in those. November is also super busy month. So next week I'm in New York. I'm going to attend quite a few of events. So one of them is Scale Up AI with Andrew Ng. I'm humbled to hear what he has to say about the future of AI. And also, there is a very good conference for women in data. So basically, how to sell AI solutions. And we are going to learn from OpenAI and other companies which are actually, selling to us all those credits. So I want to understand what the strategy and what is the future of all those TCO topics. And this brings us to my personal area of interest. I think exploring TCO and predictable total cost of ownership of managing LLM pipeline and deployment is going to be a big issue and big topic for discussions at least in the next few months. So we came up with a blog on this topic, and you can see this link featured to you on that as well. But please do connect to me on LinkedIn, and let's have discussions offline.
All right. Well, thank you. And for our viewers, we just put up a whole bunch of QR codes for these events and her LinkedIn profile. You can always, replay this and take a picture of the QR code if you weren't able to get it, catch it when it first went by. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today and your insights in this area. I think it's fascinating. Things are changing faster than probably any of us could ever imagine. We've seen things change fast over the last couple of decades, and it's accelerating even more, surprisingly to many of us. it's going even faster now, and it takes a lot more. So great talking to you today.
Likewise.
And thanks to everyone else online for joining. Be sure to join me again in 2 weeks when my guest is going to be Snowflake data superhero and data practice lead at Interworks, Chris Hasty. And as always, be sure to like the replays from today's show and tell your friends about the True Data Ops podcast. Don't forget to go to truedataops.org, subscribe to the podcast, and then you won't miss any of our future episodes. So until next time, this is Kent Graziano, the Data Warrior, signing off for now.